This week, we're listening again to a visit with Randy Dixon from the Pryor Center that first aired this past March.
What we have experienced, the kind of growth we have experienced, is somewhat healthy. We measure our progress by what we can do for those people who don't have enough, and in Arkansas, we're not doing enough for those kinds of people.
That is the voice of J. Bill Becker. More about him in just a second. I will tell you that with me in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio is Randy Dixon with the David and Barbara Pryor Center for Arkansas Oral and Visual History. Welcome.
Hello, Kyle. It's great to be here.
Great to have you. Okay. J. Bill Becker is not one of those names who I think would be considered a household name in Arkansas.
No, not at all. Most of the people that I talk to when I was working on this for this week, I mentioned his name and they had no idea who he was.
That isn't to say he was not influential in Arkansas politics.
No, he was kind of, you would say behind the scenes, but he really wasn't. I looked and he was in the news scores, maybe hundreds of times during his tenure as president of the AFL-CIO. From, long time, 1966 to, 64 to 96.
Wow.
Yeah, more than three decades. And it was when the AFL, which was, help me here, the American Federation of Labor,
right,
merged with the CIO, which was the Congress of Industrial Organizations.
Yes, yeah. People don't realize.
They used to be separate. Yeah. And then in the 60s, they merged, combined, and he was the first Arkansas president of the combined organizations. And he really made a name for not only himself, but for labor in Arkansas, which has never been a huge factor because it's a right-to-work state.
Right. Now, we're going to talk a little bit more about some of the things that happened in the 60s with labor, but this next cut is just kind of him talking about how poor this state was.
Right.
In the late 60s.
And he was big on statistics. He knew them. He knew his job. He knew the numbers, and he could rattle them off.
If you look at our statistical measures, Arkansas wages are below Mississippi, the lowest in the nation. Our per capita income is the second lowest in the nation. Our wages are 80 cents an hour below the national average. I would say generally the quality of life of our people has been expanded, but we have to be reminded, I think, all the time that we still have in Arkansas 47% of our families who are living in poverty. And we're not touching enough people who really need help. I think as our economy grows, the labor force in Arkansas will be responsive to that growth, and so will the labor movement. I think we've had a relatively good success. Workers have organized into unions as industry has come into Arkansas, and I think we are a partner in this kind of progress.
47% of Arkansas households in poverty.
Yes. That was, and that was in 1969 he was talking there.
Yeah.
So that was even before the 1970s recession.
Right.
So it gets worse.
Wow.
Yeah, especially for the minimum wage worker, the laborers that would be union members that he stood for very strongly.
Very strongly. And,
yeah.
And you talked to our partner, Roby Brock, with Talk Business and Politics about Mr. Becker.
Right. And he, this is what he said.
So J. Bill Becker comes into the Arkansas AFL-CIO to lead that movement really as it's peaking post-World War II in the 1950s and the 1960s. Labor had its biggest gains. Obviously, the economy was cooking pretty good after the war. He gets to lead the organization through, those early decades of, really fantastic growth and really to where Arkansas was at its peak in terms of the labor movement. Again, it still was not, majority of the workers in the state, but it was substantial, and they had a lot of political influence in large part due to the fact that, you know, the labor union nationally was tied to Democrats out of Franklin Roosevelt, the New Deal, and there still were vestiges of all of that across the state of Arkansas politically. So the AFL-CIO, that was an important endorsement for people to get in a Democratic primary, and you never saw a piece of political pamphlet or a sign that didn't have a union label on it. That was tantamount to losing a Democratic primary. Mm-hmm. You didn't patronize labor and use one of the labor shops for all your printed material.
That's Roby Brock talking about J. Bill Becker, who is our subject of a Prior Center profile this week.
He brought up endorsements.
Right, which used to matter. I mean,
It did used to be a pretty big deal, yeah. Even though, you know, the percentage, there might have been 100,000, though,
right,
in this state, which at the time, what, 2 million?
Probably.
And they weren't even voters.
Right.
So when you have 100,000 strong, that's substantial. And making an endorsement of a candidate, especially a gubernatorial candidate, was a big deal. So this next clip sort of shows kind of behind the scenes. You open the curtain to the process, and there was a process to the union endorsing a candidate. Becker would make a recommendation, but it was the entire
body.
They would have a convention every year, and when it was an election year, they would do that. So in this case, in this interview, Becker is actually in the governor's conference room when they pulled him aside. The reporters pulled him aside, and it was Governor David Pryor at the time, and he was running for re-election, and Becker was sort of weighing whether he should recommend his re-election to the body.
Exactly how, in your view, does he stand with organized labor?
Well, with some he stands very good, and with some he stands very bad with organized labor.
How does he stand with you?
How does he stand with me? I'm going to wait until all the candidates are filed, and he comes to our convention, and we discuss with him some issues. And we have a committee who will do the interviewing, and then a decision will be made for anyone to receive an endorsement. It takes a two-thirds vote of our convention.
Well, you're indicating that his labor support has eroded somewhat. Is that erosion significant?
I think it can be safely said that his labor support has eroded some.
And just to show how much attention, you know, it can be argued how much actual influence it had, but how much attention endorsements would get.
Well, it made news.
Yeah, exactly.
It did, and the newspapers would cover the convention extensively. Television would cover the conventions because once they made votes on issues, but especially endorsements, it would be worthy of news stories. And here is just a portion of a KATV report from Judy Pryor.
Some of the questions asked the governor today concern collective bargaining for public employees, questions on unemployment insurance, and the prison system and the construction of some buildings there. There are around 100,000 members of the AFL-CIO in the state of Arkansas. The announcement of just what candidates they will endorse should be made sometime tomorrow afternoon. This is Judy Pryor reporting.
That's from KATV's Judy Pryor. It's one of the archives that we're using this week from the Pryor Center for Arkansas Oral and Visual History. All right. There are certain things, I think, depending on your generation, you probably intellectually know they haven't always been there, but it's always been a part of your life or part of the conversation around your life. Minimum wage being one of those for me. Oh, before 1968, there was no minimum wage in Arkansas.
Right. You could be paid anything. You could be paid 75 cents an hour.
Yeah.
Or in that case, it could have been 35 cents an hour and you're relying on tips or something along those lines. And you're right. There was no law. And one of Becker's biggest accomplishments in his time as president was to push for legislation in Arkansas for a minimum wage. And in 1968, that happened. And he was at the signing ceremony He was on hand when Governor Winthrop Rockefeller signed the bill into law. And he actually said that the passage of this law indicated that labor had reached its maturity in Arkansas. So he talked to reporters right after the signing.
Mr. Becker, how do you feel that the increase in the minimum wage will affect the economy of the state?
Well, I think it'll be a monumental factor in our social and economic progress and will help spread the abundance of our wealth to some forgotten people who have needed it for a long, long time.
Some observers feel that the increase in the minimum wage will cause a substantial rise in prices. How do you feel about this?
Well, you know, the public might be concerned about this, except we've had 30 years of experience under federal minimum wage legislation. And these prophets of disaster have said not only this, but that it would curtail employment opportunities. It just hasn't happened. The Wall Street Journal, as a matter of fact, did a study on this after the last increase in the minimum wage. And they found that the employment and price structure showed little overall effect as a result of the minimum wage. I wish there were some concern expressed for the $1 million in Arkansas that is lost by some 7,000-8,000 people from chiseling under the wage hour law.
Then you feel that the economic reaction should be no different than in the past?
No, it's going to help the economy by pumping in some badly needed purchasing power. And when you charge increased prices, I think you're just whipping the wrong mule. There are other factors involved in price increases.
All right, let's go back a little bit to something we talked about for a bit last week, and that was the Constitutional Convention in Arkansas in 1968. It turns out that the document that built was rejected by voters, so it didn't come into fruition. But J. Bill Becker was weighing in on it.
Well, even if it were left out, we'd have a problem, as we want it to be left out. Because of the mistakes they've made on interest rates, they've removed the ceiling entirely on interest rates. The loan sharks will have a field day in Arkansas. They're allowing the cities, who are for city sales and payroll tax, to pass those taxes without any guidelines. They have done several things like that. They're diluting the authority of the people on initiative and referendum. And these are major errors that need to be corrected before we even consider supporting any new document.
Okay, so we've got the minimum wage passed. We've got the new Constitution rejected.
Right.
So now we're moving into the 70s and we're talking recession.
Gas prices were astronomical for considered in the contemporary times, and jobless numbers were at all-time highs in Arkansas. Well, maybe not all-time highs because of the Depression, but at, you know, highs for the period.
Right. And now what we're moving into is 1974, when inflation was higher than it had been post-World War II in the 40s. So, of course, Becker is concerned about the workers who are making this minimum wage or making a certain wage that may not keep up with inflation.
And I'm not surprised. It's not unusual because what we have is unchecked inflation. Last year, the rate was 11.1%, which means, of course, that the purchasing power of these employees is down drastically, and they're already at the bottom end of the economic ladder. That's basically the problem. It's compounded by the fact, however, that there's no vehicle by way of a law, like a collective bargaining law, that would let them, in an orderly way, present their demands and solve their problems and disputes.
What was the inflation rate in 1974?
It was 12.4%. Now, right now, inflation is in the news because it's just over 4%.
Yeah.
So let's talk three times higher than it is now. Mm. And it was dismal. I mean, the fiscal outlook was, in a word, dismal. So he was asked by a reporter about what he saw in the year coming up. He was still worried about inflation. He was still worried about the workers keeping up. But the word strike came up.
Well, the next year ahead, I suppose, means doing what we can to help fight inflation. At the same time, catching up on all of the earning power that we've lost. And I suppose the year ahead will be the year of collective bargaining and perhaps of strikes, although we hope not. We hope that the Ford administration will do something about controlling inflation. It's the number one problem of working people, and of course, as the president has said, the number one public enemy, inflation.
I'm talking about J. Bill Becker, who was a longtime president of the Arkansas AFL-CIO for more than 30 years. So he had relationships with a lot of governors, including
the Bill Clinton.
Famous.
Right. And he was not always seeing eye to eye with him. I mean, they would butt heads, and it was well covered. It was well known. And sometimes he would get the endorsement of labor. Sometimes he wouldn't. But something came up. I was talking to his son, who I went to high school with, mm-hmm. on the phone the other day. And he told him that one of his, I guess you could call it a downfall or a blemish for him, at least in Arkansas, not for everyone, and unless you're a Bill Clinton fan, but during the 92 campaign.
This is Clinton's presidential campaign.
Yes. Well, I'll tell you what he had to say, and it was in a New York Times interview. I'm quoting, "Bill Clinton is mainly the friend of big business. Labor has backed him in some of the past, true, but only because he's been the lesser of two evils in a right-to-work state in the Deep South." Then he even added, "Every time he's claimed to be our friend, we've ended up with a knife in the back." That's pretty strong stuff. He also went on CNN and talked about it. So that didn't necessarily go over too well in Arkansas. And when I talked to his son, he said his father was convinced that it cost him his final run for president of the AFL-CIO in 1996. He lost the election to Alan Hughes. And so I asked Roby Brock about his legacy.
Yeah, I think that Bill Becker was really a fighting man fighting for the little guy and the Arkansas worker. His reputation was not as a compromiser, not as a back-slapping good old boy with the, you know, political system. He was an aggressive supporter of the labor movement, and he fought very hard for, the gains that they made and up at the legislature, the things that they would fight for. He didn't mind punching you in the mouth in the heat of a battle. That was his tactic, was to, you know, kind of knock you backwards and make you deal with him versus, you know, finding a way to kind of, you know, work quietly behind the scenes. He definitely was a fighter in that respect.
So when you think about what he said about Bill Clinton in the New York Times interview and on CNN, he probably lost a lot of support from Arkansas Democrats who saw Bill Clinton as a flag bearer.
And that was probably almost all of them.
Yeah.
So it really hurt him. And so he lost the election. He had a heck of a run of more than 30 years. And so he was celebrated. Mm-hmm. He was by the union, and they had a huge retirement dinner for him in August of 97, and he died that same year in December. And at the time of his death, he was the longest serving AFL-CIO president in the country.
Oh, I can imagine.
It was a legacy.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what I'd asked Roby Brock about, but let's go ahead, if we may,
yes.
And let J. Bill Becker have the last word.
We like to feel that we are a part of this society, although we fully recognize that there are certain elements in our society who disagree and would like to see us go away and never be heard from again, but that's not a fact in our industrial democracy. In a free enterprise society, labor does have a right to exist, and so do unions. But I think the workforce in our state is as good or better, has greater quality than anywhere in the country.
Randy Dixon with the David and Barbara Pryor Center for Arkansas Oral and Visual History. Thank you very much.
It was great. I'll see you next week.